Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's show, we are honored to have one of the area's emerging companies at CrowdTunes to talk about the challenges of funding an early stage company, of launching that early stage company, and of growing its presence in the community. So let me tell you just a little bit about our guest. Lee Cornfield is an innovator. He is taking the concept of the old jukebox that we were used to in the restaurants and those kind of things. And I remember those days. I'm aging myself. And added a modern twist to it by taking it to the internet, to the iPad, to the tabletop, so that you're out there actively engaged in choosing the music you're going to hear at that restaurant, that bar, or that venue of any kind as you're there. So I'm going to let Lee start right in by explaining how does that work. And thanks for being on the show, Lee.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So the basic idea is we want you to be able to walk into a bar or restaurant and check into that location on your phone, see what songs are coming up, and then bid on the song that comes up next. So think of it as a jukebox on your phone. But the cool twist to it is that it's interactive and it's collective number of bids.
And it's competitive.
Exactly. That's our favorite part. So if you think about it this way, with the old jukebox, you used to put a dollar in, your song went into a queue, and it played at some point later in the night, you know, based on when you put the dollar in. What we're saying now is you can go onto your phone, you can see what songs are coming up, you can see how much somebody has bid on a song, and then bid more if you want your song to play now.
Now, my favorite part, he was just showing me before we came on the air, is you can nuke a song. So that means if I absolutely hate that artist, it's going to split my head open. I just don't want to hear it over my dinner. I can pay to get rid of it.
That's absolutely right. I have an irrational dislike for Taylor Swift. So anytime I see her on there, I always go ahead and nuke her. But it's a multiplier. So if I had bid one credit on it and you wanted to nuke it, you actually pay five credits. But me as the user who bid one credit on that song still gets my credit back.
Okay, so could you outbid me? Could you come back and say for 10 credits I can unnuke your nuke?
We haven't left it up to that yet. But,
okay.
But certainly, I mean, when we talk about the core usage of it, what we love to see is when we get two groups of people bidding against each other. So we'll have one group over here bidding for Whitney Houston and another group bidding for Pharrell Williams. And they'll be going back and forth while the current song's playing. And when the song is done, the song with the most collective bids plays, and you see one of the groups go crazy. And, you know, what we love about that is at some point it's not even about your song playing, it's about winning.
And so you were, before the show, you were showing me the application. So it is central to the area you're in, just not only that restaurant, but the other restaurants and venues that are participating in that area.
That's right. We're a Durham-based company. We started, it was a couple of Duke students at business school. We picked up a few technical co-founders, one undergrad, current undergrad at Duke, Davis Gossage, and two technical co-founders, Rob Whitman and Phil Jacobson. We're actually based at the American Underground at Maine in Durham. And we have 13 venues in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill.
The two in Chapel Hill you were telling me about?
That's right. The Library and Goodfellas are our two locations in Chapel Hill.
So everybody can rush out and try this out tonight.
That's exactly right. And we're continuing to expand in the area as well. But, you know, the way that it's based is it checks you in via the location. So, you know.
So I come into the restaurant or the bar or whatever this is, the library.
Yeah.
And check in, take my smartphone. I log in through Facebook, social media.
It's literally an app.
Once
you download the app, it will automatically check you into that venue given your location, and you'll be ready to go. You're going to get some free credits for checking into the location. You can get more from posting on Facebook or Twitter about the venue, referring a friend. There's some promo codes you can get. Those are all free ways to earn credits.
Okay, so I walk in. My phone's already got the app.
Yep.
My friends come with me. Yep. They don't have the app. I can immediately earn credits by getting my 10 friends that I went to this venue with. They all sign up, I get those credits, and the bidding begins.
Absolutely.
So how long does it rank it? So let's say there's two songs that people bid 10 credits to get. How do you decide which one's coming up next on all those kind of, is it an algorithm?
Yeah, I mean, when it's two songs with the same number of bids, it would just be whichever one came first.
First come, first serve.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, again, what you generally see is the bidding will be, you know, one will have one credit, another will have two, another will have three. and people will continue to build it up as they want their song to play now.
Right. And so it's a really interactive. So when we're thinking about this from a venue standpoint, this is engaging our entire clientele that's there right then or outside waiting to get in, and selecting the music they're listening to and competing with a table across the room and those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, we think that the value proposition to the venue is great. And based on all our venues that have it now, they agree. So for the venue, it's a totally free and legal solution. We give them an iPad MIDI. They hook up to the wireless internet. They get a television screen that has some CrowdTune stuff on it, but ad space for them. And they're up and running with a total, you know, music solution immediately.
So if we look, we're in the restaurant. They have a 52-inch TV up on the wall. So we see the list of tunes coming up, what our choices are, those kind of things. Is it really literally any artist that's out there current? Or
we have 22 million songs.
Okay.
Now, the venue the venue does get to limit what songs they want. So if they, you know, if I'm a country western bar and I don't want heavy metal, I can limit people.
Or Taylor Swift.
Or Taylor Swift. Yeah. So, you know, I can do that as a venue owner.
Okay.
But, you know, there is 22 million tracks for them. And,
right.
And they can create stations the same way you would on Pandora. There's some preset stations. You know, in terms of what we give to them, not only is it saving them money because it's free and legal, but ultimately we think it also drives revenue for them. It drives revenue exactly because of what you're saying. It engages the customer in a way that nothing else today can. Customers will stay longer and spend more money. And on top of that, you get some social media marketing. You also get to see what other locations have it. So if I buy credits at the library and I want to go across the street to Goodfellas, I can use those credits at Goodfellas and even see that Goodfellas has it.
Well, and they can have completely different playlists to choose from.
Yeah.
So again, an old timer like me that would not want some of the modern stuff and maybe no Taylor Swift, I can go out there and actually look to see which venues have playlists that I like and then kind of go from there too.
So, yes, most definitely.
So I can take my musical preference and then make my food preference or my entertainment preference.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, when we actually see this working, we have a fun chart that kind of shows how the bids go overnight. And I'm sure it's not entirely surprising as people drink more, they spend a little bit more money.
You're kidding.
But we've seen...
Hopefully they eat more to offset
absolutely. Yes. We've seen single songs go for $20.
Wow.
I mean, if it gets really competitive, you know, that $20 isn't one person bidding $20. It's 10 people bidding $2 a piece because they want their group song
to play
now.
Yeah. And so it's somebody wants to dance to that song.
That's
or
right.
Somebody wants to.
That's exactly right.
But it's not just restaurants and bars. This could be gyms.
Mm-hmm.
It could be grocery stores.
That's absolutely
right. It
could
be any business that's out there, for-profit, non-profit, any kind of community centers.
That's absolutely true. The most direct application and one that we're actually exploring right now is with athletics.
Oh, okay.
So we did a pilot last week with Florida State University and Duke University, in which we ran crowd tunes at a soccer match. So what ends up happening is they pre-select. They limit very much what you could bid on. They pre-select, call it 50 to 100 songs. And the fans can check into the stadium and then choose the music that plays during the pregame and during halftime. And it's a really cool way to let the fans engage in music that, you know, they're already going to play anyway. And ultimately, we see this as having applications outside of soccer. We're going to do a women's volleyball tournament at Duke this Friday. Ultimately, basketball and football are really great applications, and we're going to meet with the ACC next week to talk to them about it.
So when we're thinking about this is, you know, if I'm a church and I'm having an event and I want to make sure everything that's being played and listened to, I can choose the Christian gospel music, limit it to a few artists or everyone. I know Building 429 is coming to one of the churches in Cary, so if you just wanted to pull everybody in, that's a really strong lure then to get different age groups or different people in at different times of day.
Yes.
Because you could literally do different music playlists at, you know, your senior hour from 4 to 6 and get everybody in early for early bird special. And then something else after hours for the teens and the tweens and the bar scene.
It's absolutely true. And you know, as this has went on, it was an idea that came about in September of 2012. You know, we built a prototype last summer. We tested a lot. The feedback from local owners has been the key to kind of getting it to where it is. And these type of controls that you're talking about, allowing them to to really limit what they want to hear within their venue has been a huge piece, a huge driving force of where we are today, and it allows us to do the things you're talking about.
So are some of the options in there, like if I wanted to make sure it had no language issues?
Yes, absolutely.
You could literally say, okay, no song can come up that has inappropriate language that's not family friendly.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
You want Disney rated. So it's literally, you can stay as current or as oldies as you want. So 22 million songs is not limited by current play, like the radio stations maybe, that you hear the same top 40 3,000 times a day. But you can literally have an engaged core group of people that come just because they don't have to listen to what they don't want to hear.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, we've got the general manager over at Full Steam Brewery in Durham, his name's Camper, is a brilliant guy when it comes to finding music that's obscure. And he's only
in that 22 million songs.
He's only stumped us a couple times, but he's, you know, he's very good at looking for songs that I've never even heard of. So
Batman and His Grandma. That came out of a jukebox when I was a kid, and that was the most funny song. And we kept old jukeboxes. You used to get the old 45s. I know I'm dating myself. But we had a lot of those obscure songs that went through different times of Martian melodies and those kind of things. I bet I could stump your crowd tunes list if I made a request from all the stuff we grew up listening to. So what do you see? I mean, you're saying you started essentially the idea in 2012. Mm-hmm. 2013, you really got a prototype. You got it out there. You're getting it adopted. What's your goal now? I know you're going on in the next month or so on Real Deal, which was our local Shark Tank. Robert's supposed to be joining us today to talk a little bit about that. He's running behind. And you're out there looking for funding. Yeah. What do you need that funding for? What's your growth projections? Who are you talking to? What do you want to do with that CrowdTunes?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting process. And actually, RTP is a great place for entrepreneurship. We think that the American Underground has been hugely helpful to us. People like the Real Deal. What we're looking for the funding, so we're looking for about $500,000. We're looking for the funding for primarily three things. First is scaling, so sales and marketing. You know, we really want to get not only more venues, but more customer engagement. You know, this is more fun the more people that are on it. So that's a big piece of it. The second piece is Android development. So we are just
iOS
right now, but we're hoping this fall, October, November, we'll be on Android. So we need some money for that development. And then the last piece is actually legal. So the way we are set up right now, we are totally legal to play music in a public space, but sourcing the music and paying the royalties,
And
all of that
making
stuff,
sure the artists and everybody gets
exactly
theirs.
There's a cost associated with that. In terms of doing the raise, you know, it's something we're very fortunate. Up to this point, we've actually received $71,000 in grant money, $25,000 from Duke University and $46,000 from an NC Idea grant.
Okay.
Both of which have been hugely helpful, not just from a financial standpoint, but also from, you know, advice and kind of helping guide us. In terms of raising the money, there's a lot of local angels in the area. We've met with a large number of them. We recently brought David Gardner, who's a pretty well-known angel, onto our board, and we are going to go through due diligence with RTP Capital, and we're going to pitch to Triangle Angel Partners. It would be September 8th, I think.
Okay.
So we're working with a couple angel groups locally to look at raising that money. But, you know, the Real Deal and certainly some other investors outside of this area are also people that we're talking to.
So when we're talking about the grants as an enabling funds, because for those who aren't familiar with grants, they don't have to be repaid. Depending on where the grant funds come from, they're usually allowed to be used for almost anything that's business related.
Yeah.
And it's non-dilutive, meaning you're not giving up ownership of the company during that time period where you're ramping up. So a year from now, what do you want at CrowdTunes to be like?
So we see this as being something that can scale pretty rapidly. We expect to be in 50 venues by the end of the year.
Here locally.
Okay. And we'll start to expand outside the local area, but we want to get it right here. And we'll start to expand out this year, and we think we can get into 1,000 by the end of 2015. And 1,000 venues would, again, you're trying to build scale in specific areas. So one of the things we're looking at is if we do athletics.
Right.
Think about college towns is a really good place to do it. So Florida State's doing a pilot. University of South Florida and Tampa is going to do a pilot. University of Florida is probably going to do one in Gainesville. Right. You can go into those towns and say, hey, look, there's 50,000 people with this app on their phone. You should really use this in your restaurant or bar.
Well, and from the standpoint of that almost viral, so you did it at Duke with against Florida. They see it.
Yep.
They go back. They're talking about it.
Yep.
And then everybody's, you know, talking about, well, why don't we have it or whatever. But somewhat you're constrained by the infrastructure of wherever everybody's gathering. If they don't have internet, if they don't have the right capacity, bandwidth, and all those kind of things. So is that a concern to you that you're limited to that? And then there'll be areas that right now are too far behind or, you know, I call it the dinosaur and the gerbil wheel, that it just doesn't have the capacity or the bandwidth and that's going to slow your expansion?
Yeah, you know, there's some aspects of luck that come with starting a company. And for us, we're lucky. The timing is such that that is still somewhat of a concern, but much less so than you might think. I think even 5 years ago, you couldn't do what we're doing. And there's two main reasons. One is the one you just named, the infrastructure. Wireless networks within these venues were not good enough. The native sound systems were not clean enough to do this. And actually, that's why the jukebox existed, right? It's a big hard drive with a sound system on it.
Right.
And it solves those two problems. The other piece was that while people were on their phones, they just weren't – they didn't have the capability, mobile phones at that time, smartphones, to really use this technology and take advantage of all this
fun stuff.
You weren't
really engaged and connected instantaneously with your social media and that stuff. You were kind of sitting there waiting for things to happen.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, what we've seen is that more than 95% of the venues we're in have the wireless connection and the sound system necessary to make this technology work. And what's great about it is really all they need is the sound system, so a headphone jack, and a good enough wireless connection to connect the iPad. Because as a user, my smartphone can be connected to my data network. It doesn't have to be on the wireless network. So we're not streaming a tremendous amount of data, so it doesn't require this, you know, robust, crazy fast system. It's just got to be something that's reasonably reliable.
So let's say I'm a new restaurant. I have the most basic rudimentary sound system of, you know, it's not plugged into an iPad now. What kind of changes do those types of businesses have infrastructure-wise? You're handing them the iPad, but they really do have to have internal systems that plug into that at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much every place has some sort of sound system. Whether or not it's fully integrated is a question. But, I mean, even if you just had a couple speakers that you could plug in, you know, you could plug into an iPod,
right?
Like, that still works. And,
okay.
And, you know, a lot of the places that we go now, the main things that people use are Sirius satellite radio, Pandora, their own computers or their own iPods, some of which are legal, some of which are not. So, you know, all of those pretty much are playing through the same infrastructure that we would play through.
Well, and it's an interesting because when we think we go to a restaurant, we're sitting at a table with our friends. We may know somebody across the room, but we're really not engaging with them.
That's right.
We're in our little group. We may get up and say hi or something like that. But what you're saying is we're bringing a connectivity within a restaurant, between venues, into a region, and we'll be able to – will this, like, have national bidding? I mean, right now we're talking about, you know, people are bidding here. Is everybody across the country going to ultimately be bidding for this, or will it still be kind of localized so you know what you're listening to in your neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, you'll still only be able to bid on something kind of within the venue you're at. I mean, that's mostly designed so that we had a funny situation where an owner of one of our venues that was next door to another venue was bidding on crappy songs.
Okay.
So fortunately, you can kick a user out, but we wouldn't want people, you know, in Des Moines bidding on songs in Austin, right? You want people bidding on songs who are at that venue.
But let's say, and I'll pick something off, Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
I have all of these across the country. I could pick the playlist to be the same in all of them. And could I literally ask that all of my stores in the chain be seeing the same songs at the same time?
Yeah, we could do that. You know, I certainly think from an interactive standpoint, you know, there's people might put different songs in the queue, but the reality is that for chains, so we're talking with the Apple Gold Group out of Raleigh. They've got 133 locations now, I think. And the conversations with them, being able to control it from a central system and being able to actually set either the same or, frankly, different playlists based on the venue and what type of customers there is something that's really important to them. And actually, when we talk about the value proposition to a big business like that, something that we bring to the table that other companies that provide sound can't is we were able to give some demographic data on the people who come to your restaurant. We can tell you, how old they are, male, female, how often they come back, how long they spend there. You're even able to push out, we haven't rolled it out yet, but you're even able to push out messaging to them. So, say...
And all that's opt-in once they accept that app.
That's exactly right.
It's there, and so that messaging can go out.
Yeah, and you think about this from an athletic standpoint. Maybe you're at Duke Soccer and you want to send out a message saying, we've got discount tickets for the volleyball game this Friday. They can send a message to everyone at the venue and say, hey, look, free tickets, first come, first serve, or something of the sort. So it gives them a lot of opportunity to engage and do some fun stuff with it.
So in those banners and that space around that, they can message, they could get the cheer team to say, okay, here comes, everybody cheer at a certain point or something.
Yeah.
So they could literally make it as personal and engaging to their audience and their venue as possible.
That's right. And of course, we'll put limits on how often they can do it. We don't want users just getting inundated with messaging. But,
like our cell phone carriers.
Exactly. So it's definitely, there's a lot of cool possibilities for this. Some of the other stuff when you're talking about interacting with other people at the venue, we've talked about maybe you can dedicate a song to somebody, which would be kind of cool. This idea of gaining status as time goes on. Say every time you bid on a song, somebody else bids on it and it plays. You might go from being a groupie to a stagehand to a backup singer to a rock star, right? You might move up and there might be kind of extra.
I would avoid the groupie, maybe a roadie.
extra benefits associated with kind of gaining that status. So it's social, it's gamified, it's really fun, and really gets people interacting with each other.
So what does your infrastructure look like? What's the staffing plan for a grant? You said $500,000, which sounds a lot to a lot of people, but really, if you're going to be serving 1,000 clients, which may be more than 1,000 locations, depending on how you sign everybody up, that takes infrastructure. You said you're handing them each an iPad. What else is going on behind that? What are you guys doing behind the scenes? How many people are on your team? How many people are you going to need to support those 1,000 clients?
Yeah, so the way it's set up now, there's myself and my other co-founder who went to Fuqua, Brandon Magsum, and he's the CEO. And then we've got two technical co-founders and a third part-time. He's a student at Duke. So we've got 5 employees right now. As we scale up, certainly you're going to add a little bit more from a development standpoint. But the big piece will be 2 things. One will be sales, and the other will be customer support, right?
Right. So technical stuff.
Yeah. So rolling it out at a mass level, today it's been essentially me going door to door. But that won't work if we're going to scale it. So there's a few different ways to kind of work with partnerships in order to make this thing scale. So the first is going out to chains, so people like Apple Gold Group, but also doing something like an internship program. So say we go to Florida State, we get some seniors on board, and we say every place that you sell, you'll get some money. We're also going to give you a marketing budget so they can go out and be the sales force on the ground.
Right.
There's also a professional network of people called operators. They sell arcade games and pool tables into bars already, and they can go out and sell this thing again for a commission and service it themselves. And then one of the really exciting things is there's technology providers. So Elacart is a company that's putting a tablet on every single table in every single Applebee's throughout the country by the end of the year. And what they're trying to do is provide people with the opportunity to order and pay for their bill.
Right.
But they ultimately would love for people to be able to choose the music from the table. So partnering with somebody like that really scales you out pretty quickly into a lot of locations. And would help keep us from having a ton of staff, per se, but we would still obviously have people who we were working with to really scale it.
And it really still adds to the complexity of that business model of those relationships and making sure they maintain the quality and those kind of things, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a from a standpoint, you know, from a technical standpoint, we're very fortunate. You know, our technical co-founders have built it to be extremely scalable and integrated. You know, certainly you're going to bring on more people to do quality assurance and development and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't think when we look at headcount that the vast majority of the headcount will come kind of in the core group. The most of the headcount will come in
field.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and you're really targeting the tech savvy, this generation that's out there in the colleges, the universities, and where they go. So those credits coming in, I go into a venue, I have my app, they're like, well, I really wanted to use this. I can use this down the street type
that's
thing.
That's exactly right.
And so they could sign, potentially, you could set up something, they could sign up or have somebody contact you through that and they get credits, right?
Yes, absolutely.
There's all those kind of...
Not just to refer a friend, but refer a bar, exactly as you said. And you know, one of the things that we think is important, as I mentioned at the beginning, you can earn credits for free. You can also purchase them, right? And that's ultimately how we make money. The user goes in and they purchase credits between a quarter and 40 cents a piece, depending on how many they buy. But it's really important that you can use those credits anywhere that CrowdTunes is. It's not, I purchase them at Goodfellas and I can only use them at Goodfellas. That would be very limiting in our mind.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and thank our underwriters, and we'll come back with Lee Kornfeld of CrowdTunes. Well, hang on here. We seem to be experiencing technical difficulties. Well, let's just keep talking for a minute while I figure out what's going on with the board. So explain how the venues, Lee, make their money and all those kind of things.
Yeah, so, you know, when we talk about the venues actually making money, as of today, the first thing they do is they save some money on their music solutions. So, you know, they might be paying anywhere from $15 to $40 a month for what they're using today. So we're giving it them, you know, giving to them for free. So we save them money. You know, as I mentioned, the big piece is about them making more money. And they're making money not just from drawing more patrons, but keeping them there longer, spending more money.
Having more fun.
That's right. Ultimately, they're, you know, if we figure out exactly how the financials work, we will probably share some of the profit with them because we want everyone to gain from, you know, people engaging. But we definitely know that there, you know, based on our empirical experience, that there is an uptick in people, you know, coming back. We've heard of people coming in and, you know, there being a DJ on Friday night and saying, oh, why isn't CrowdTunes up? So people are coming back and asking for it.
Just nuking a song would keep me in some places faster. All right, we're going to try this one more time and let's see if our line comes up. We'd like to thank our Golden Voice underwriters, The Forest Firm, providing sound legal counsel to new, existing, and growing businesses. Get to know The Forest Firm at their website, www.forestfirm.com. That's www.forestfirm.com. And get to know Focus Resources, your strategic operational and financial business consultant. Visit their website at www.focusresourcesinc.com. That's www.focusresourcesinc.com. We'd also like to thank Harrington Bank, your community bank. Get to know your neighbor at www.bankatharrington.com. That's www.bankatharrington.com. And finally, we'd like to thank IWP Photography, capturing the important moments of your professional, business, and personal life. With event photography and live event painting, get to know them at their website, www.iwpphotography.com. That's www.iwpphotography.com. Thanks to all of our underwriters.
Focus on Business and WCOM FM are proud to support the Ronald McDonald House of Durham. To learn more about the Ronald McDonald House of Durham, visit their website at www.ronaldhousedurham.org. That's www.ronaldhousedurham.org, or give them a call at 919-281-1065. WCOM-FM and Focus on Business are proud to support Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina, serving the Triangle. Make-A-Wish of Eastern North Carolina is your community Make-A-Wish. To learn more about what Make-A-Wish is doing, visit their website at www.eastnc.wish.org. That's www.eastnc.wish.org, or give them a call at 1-800-432-WISH. That's 1-800-432-9474.
This is Focus on Business, and I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Today, we're talking to Lee Kornfeld of CrowdTunes about a virtual jukebox, is how I'm going to refer to it. So we get to go to these lovely venues where we love to eat. We haven't always been crazy about the music, and now they have crowd tunes, and we have some say about what's playing and what sequence. Who are you competing against in the marketplace? Because I've not heard of this before. Robert introduced us. So give me kind of an idea of who your competition is that's in the same space or in similar.
Yeah, so there's about 600,000 restaurants and bars in the United States. About 100,000 of them are served by jukeboxes. They're not the old analog ones. They're digital jukeboxes. But TouchTunes is the big player in the market. They're in about 60,000 venues. And they're exactly what you think they are. You walk up, put a dollar in, and you choose your song, and it'll play in whichever order you put it
so
in.
So songs are a dollar now?
Songs are a dollar.
I don't remember when they were a nickel, but okay.
Some places are 50 cents, but it's often right. A dollar. The other side of the equation, and the vast majority of the places are satellite radio, so Muzak or Sirius or Pandora. We find ourselves kind of in the middle of them, right? So mm-hmm. The jukeboxes are really expensive. They cost $5,000. They're not interactive. They take up space in the bar. Satellite radio, a little less expensive, still has more cost than us, but there's no interaction at all. In that middle space, there's really one or two main competitors. The primary one is a company out of California called Rockbot. They raised $1.2 million from Google Ventures, among other people. But unfortunately, they started a little bit too early, exactly okay. As we were talking about
right,
earlier.
Right, that infrastructure timing is critical.
Exactly. So they started about 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, the Wi-Fi really wasn't good enough. So what they did was they created this engineering-grade piece of hardware that you plug into a landline.
Okay.
And it sunk a lot of their capital. The other piece of it is that they're not quite as – they have a different business model. It's okay. A flat 50-cent fee to put your song in the queue, and then people in the bar can kind of vote up or down. But it's not really that marketplace. You don't get that
right. It's not an engagement.
Feeling.
You're just paying your 50 cents, get in line. It'll come eventually, hopefully.
That's right. And, okay. You know, we've seen – they've had some success. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they're a really good company. But we do think that the fact that they came in a little bit early is hurting them a lot. There's another company called Play My Song. It's actually a Swedish company, I believe. They've got some locations in New York, but they are literally just a jukebox on your phone. So 50 cents, and then that's it. The songs will play in the order that they play. You know, for us, we look at this as something where we think we have a pretty unique offering both to the venue and to the patron. And we've gotten great feedback on it. I mean, every place that we've went, we've really felt like people have loved it and had a lot of fun with it. And you know, you said clearly, you know, the 21 to 35-year-old generation is the primary one. But honestly, my parents love it. You know, they've asked a lot about being able to use it
at
home.
Like I said, that nuking option. I'd be spending all my money on nuking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different age groups that enjoy this and enjoy the idea of getting on your phones. And honestly, I mean, it's not just 21 to 35-year-olds on their smartphones.
Well, and we're sitting here and all these different ideas are running through my head about – how dynamic this is and how engaging this is. I mean, we're competitive. Let's just face it. When we go out, we want to go to the soccer team or whatever.
Yeah.
But also locally, we have a lot of talent in local communities and stuff that don't get play on the radio. You know, they can't hit all the local venues they want to. Not everybody has a stage. How could we get that talent engaged in that local marketplace that they can get their music in that playlist?
Yeah, so, you know, certainly we have a decent number of local artists on, you know, within our music library. And, you know, it's nice talking about it right next to Cat's Cradle. We've talked about some fun stuff with that. You know, one example would be doing it. We're not a DJ replacement. So a place like the library, when they have a DJ, you know, a DJ knows exactly what they're doing. But on certain nights, it could be really fun to have somebody in there DJing and using crowd tunes. So what the DJ would do is say, we're going to do a local artist night, a local band night. Only local artists are going to play. And what we could do is have, you know, people voting on which songs they want to hear. And the DJ will have, obviously, input into what plays. But it's kind of a cool idea in being able to have both the interactive piece of crowd tunes, but also have a DJ who's making sure that exactly the local bands and the local type of artists that we want to hear are playing.
Well, and we're talking about 22 million songs that you have in there. Where do they come from? Is it from the record recording studios? Is it from some huge database that's out there?
It's a huge content provider. So fortunately, it's not something we manage. And gosh, what do they say? About 10,000 new songs get added every day. So that's definitely not something
that's actually scary.
We're not going to mess with that.
Right. So, but when we're thinking about global impact of businesses, but we like local flavor. So we watch the local news, not for the international news. We watch it for the local stuff. Yep. We want to know what our neighbor's listening to. We want to know all of those kind of things. So this really is a community in a restaurant, a community within the community. Yep. And as engaged as everybody gets, the more comfortable they are sitting there, taking a little bit longer at the table, where restaurants tend to like you turn over tables. But if you're still spending, that's great for the restaurant.
Yeah. And, you know, a place like Olivia's in Durham, which is a restaurant all the way up until about 9 o'clock and then flips over to a bar, you know, they can also dictate, you know, during the day, there's extremely limited bidding. You know, they're just going to have it as background music. And then at 9 o'clock, they can flip it over to bidding so they can turn the tables during the day. And then at night, they can have people stay longer, because that's when you want people staying longer.
Yeah, because the worst thing for a restaurant or any venue is what they frequently refer to as Coleman Party 2 coming to camp, and the money's, you know, you're just renting that real estate without paying the rent.
Yeah.
So from that dynamic, you're there talking to these venues, and pretty much any venue can contact you. Hit your website. What's your website for everybody?
www.crowdtunes.com. One word.
And they can go there. They can see how to contact you to sign up as a venue. Do they actually have to contact you, or can they just start something?
Yeah, so the way that it's set up, again, we're on iOS at the moment. If any venue has an iPad, they can download the app and try it out. In order to activate it in the long run, they need to let us set it up.
So it's essentially a free trial. They can try it.
But anyone could go on, download the CrowdTunes host onto the iPad, and then run it. And they would be able to see exactly what the capabilities are and what it can do.
So I try this app. I plug it into my speakers. I like it. I call you.
Yes.
And how fast then am I up and running? Is there a queue, a waiting list here that's coming in? Are you in and you got to set up and running the, you know, pretty quickly?
Yeah, it's probably take us about 10 minutes on the back end to set you up. So, you know, what we generally do with venues is we have them try it out for a couple of weeks.
Right.
Just go ahead and give it a shot. And then if they want to go and use it, then we'll get them a bunch of marketing materials. So, you know, how do you really get people to know about it? Coasters that say CrowdTunes, flyers in the bathrooms, table tents around the place. And then we're working on stuff in which we'll give you, you know, maybe we'll give you a promo code. So, like, you'll get a CrowdTunes credit card, and the promo code could be worth anywhere from 1 to 99 credits. You know, go ahead and plug it in.
Right.
All these different ways to let people know about it, you know, once the venue decides to use it full time.
Well, and I've been at locations where they've had events and getting people to walk in with the app there. But I'm also, like, my favorite restaurants, different ones, send you the newsletters. It's something there with a QR code they could scan. So we want to make it as easy for our our audience, our clients, to adopt as possible.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there's QR codes and things like that. But I mean, to be perfectly frank, that's the biggest challenge that we have. Selling venues, I'm not saying it's easy.
No.
It's certainly not. But it's not the thing that keeps me up at night. The hardest thing to do is to get customer engagement. We have been programmed that one of two things happen when you walk into a venue. Either there's a jukebox on the wall that you go in and you put some money in and pick a song, or there's music playing that you cannot control at all.
Right. And volumes.
Right. And volumes.
Now, if you could bid on the volume control too, I'll pony up some money for that right now. But we're coming in, we're passive most of the time. We're there to eat, we're there to drink, talk to whoever's at the table with us. But what you're saying is now is that dynamic changes, and if you can get the clientele to understand that early and often, that's where the adoption, it's a return on non-investment since there's no cost to the venue. But it's there, and that's how everything magnifies and grows.
Yeah, and there is certainly a network effect. I mean, if there's one person in the venue bidding on music, it's a jukebox. They're literally putting one credit in and their songs are playing. If there's five, it gets a little bit more fun. If there's 50, that's when you really see it explode. That's when you really see people having a good time with it. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun to watch what people put in the queue. It's fun to see how, you know, one group will be playing Backstreet Boys and another group.
Who's that? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Another group will be playing AC/DC. And it's, you know, they're wildly different, assuming the venue has allowed both of them to be bid on. And it's just like, it's a great way to kind of create interaction as well. I mean, these two would have been entirely separate groups that they were unlikely to interact in any way, shape, or form. And because they're interacting through the music, it creates a much more social environment.
Well, you're out there, you're trying to raise funds. This concept, it seems pretty obvious in a lot of ways. But what are kind of the questions you're getting from potential investors as to what are, you've already told us, I was going to ask what keeps you up at night, but you just told us it's getting all those people to put the app on their phone and get in the venues.
Yeah.
What kind of challenges are you having to talk with about your investors?
Yeah.
What are their concerns? Is it the infrastructure? Is it purely expansion and scalability? What's there and what are those challenges?
It's a combination of what I said and the venues. So we think of it as it's almost a chicken and an egg problem, right? In order to get venues, we need users. In order to get users, we need venues, right? So how do you go out and do this? And actually, you know, we had a conversation with one of my best friends who works at Uber, and they're among the best in the world at going into a new market, which they just came here. And getting enough drivers and enough users initially to make it work, right? And this is, you know, this is the thing that's really challenging. It's not only do I have to go in and get venues, but I've also got to get users. Because if I don't have users, there's no real value beyond satellite radio to the venue itself. So, you know, these are the main questions we get. And we've talked about how we address a lot of them, right? We've talked about how we sell it. We've talked about the in-bar marketing, but to be perfectly frank, a lot of it comes down to word of mouth. It comes down to people loving the experience that they have and telling their friends, hey, this is really cool. You should try it out. And you could do that through the, as we discussed, you can do that through the app itself.
Well, it kind of reminds me of BidRocket, and one of the other Real Deal companies that's been on the show to talk about their targeting venues and those kind of dynamics of increasing attendance, and then this is kind of synergistic with that.
You increase a great
attendance,
company.
And once they've got somebody there, this just helps even more with those kind of things. So, how important will it be those kind of synergistic relationships, strategic relationships, to the adoption, to the rollout, to getting the word out, word of mouth at venues, and those kind of things?
I mean, I think it's essential. And you know, when we talked about this college internship program, right, we probably are going to roll out one this fall at Chapel Hill.
Okay.
You know, having students.
And your website again, Wes.
having students who not only are, you know, they know the venues, they know which ones would be good fits. They're able
they
to
know where
in.
They go.
Exactly.
They know where their friends
and
are.
And then, you know, they bring their friends in. We give them a budget to go out and, you know, spend a little bit of money, tell people about it, you know, maybe even throw like a mini party and get people on it, You know, that type of stuff is what's really going to make us successful. You know, it's the same with a lot of this type of stuff. There's another local company called Steels.
Right.
And they're working on essentially social networking with venues, and they're in a lot now. They're in something like 400 venues. And for them, it's the same thing. The more people that use it, the more benefit the venue gets and the more benefit the users get. So,
well, we used to call it buzz.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting out there. Somebody wants it. You're at you see some great app, even if it's a game like 2048, right, or 2048 that everybody's addicted to.
Yeah.
Once you see somebody using it and you want to do it, I mean, and it's low cost for the venue, for the people going. I guess you could go crazy buying the credits, which is what you hope probably someone's going to do. But having that community, again, I think it's the community factor that comes into play. When you used to go to the bars or the restaurants, you put in a quarter, showing my age again, you picked your song or a dollar and you picked four songs, and it was fun waiting for your music to come up. Sometimes it was painful, the music that came up ahead of time. There was no nick button on the old jukeboxes. But you can really see that engagement, people watching to see what's coming up. When we're looking at that screen to know what the next songs are coming up on our phone or in the venue?
Yeah, the television screen is hugely interactive. So not only does it show the queue, but there's also a scroll bar at the top.
Okay.
And that's telling you what people are bidding on, if something gets nuked, what's playing, which DJ brought it to you. So who was the person who bid on the initial song? It's got a picture that shows, you know, like there's like a lot of really cool stuff that kind of lets people see what's happening and then hopefully entices them to get involved.
So right now you're testing out in the community. You're going to expand from here. Is it your plan to stay headquartered here in North Carolina, in Durham, in this area?
Yeah, most definitely. We've just had an incredible experience here. You know, I already mentioned Duke and NCIDEA being very helpful from a monetary standpoint, but there's a number of people in the area who have been really great mentors to us. John Feld out of the Center for Entrepreneurship at Fuqua. Jed Carlson, who works for Reverb Nation, he's been very helpful. Joe Velk, who's a local angel. There are just a lot of people who have been really willing to kind of get involved and help us work through the issues we've had. And, you know, this is year seven for me in Raleigh-Durham.
It's now home.
Yeah, it's home. I really do love the area, and it's a great place to live.
So do you think you would have been as successful to this point? You started in 2012. You're at 2014. Out there talking to angels. You've got clients. You've got a rollout plan. There are other areas in the country that have some of those. But the synergies here, do you think that gives you a foot in the door, a leg up, you know, to be getting in the marketplace?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think the local venues have been, frankly, very patient, right? I mean, this is a work in progress.
They're the betas.
Yeah, and they've been very patient, in part because we're a local startup.
Right.
And in part just because they're just more patient with these type of things. They understand that it takes time to get everything right.
What's a kind of an early adoption mode here because of the universities, because of all the startups, regardless of what kind they are? Well, it's kind of that environment.
And that's the other piece of it that is really helpful. When we talk about Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham, what's the connection? They all have great universities. Having great universities, smart people, relatively young professionals out at these places makes it a perfect market for us anyways. So even if we were somewhere else, I would have looked at RTP as one of the first places we would go. So it's really valuable in that respect as well.
Well, I think you've hit on something that's really going to help your business too. It's like it's RTP, but it's connected, right? So people come and go from these universities. They've used the app. They're going to go somewhere else and look for it. It's that very viral thing that you need to make the business grow, that this dynamic of the community of people coming and going and those kind of things that are going to make it.
Absolutely.
So if you had something else that kept you up at night, what would it be? And is your fundraising going to help that? Or is this still something that you're just, you know, you need to phone a friend and you're looking for more of the advisors and those things in the community to help?
I think you actually hit on it, the fundraising. That's the other thing that keeps
you up
at night.
That's always stressful.
Yeah, you know, I'm fortunate. You know, I'm 28, graduated from business school, I've got a good opportunity to work on this. But frankly, one of our technical co-founders has a one-year-old daughter. And, you know, he's been working on this with us since March.
Right. But that ramp up time and the time to get return.
And he's not getting paid the same way that I'm not getting paid. And that's
yet.
Right. Yet. That's, you know, that's one of the big things that right. keeps us up at night. And look, I think we'll be able to raise the money. I think we've seen really good traction from the local angels, really good feedback. And as I mentioned, it's a really good group of people around here. But it's definitely something that we're starting to get into the time where we need to raise the money, not just for financial security, but also for all the other things we talked about. We need the money to really make this thing grow.
Well, I know when I started my business, it's 12 years ago next month. One of the things I realized is it didn't take me very much money to go into business, but it took money to live while I was building the business. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges for early stage investors. Art.com, when they started here, I remember hearing them talk about it. Early on, no one got their concept. No one wanted to invest. And they said they were fortunate that before they quit their day jobs, they'd gotten Visa, MasterCards, Discover card, every kind of credit card. And they said those were their early stage investors, right? And so they'd put their houses up. They had done all those kind of things. What makes you want to take that risk? Yes, you're 28. Your co-founder and inventor is, you know, same age in the general vicinity.
He has a one-year-old,
right? That dynamic, that stress, that willingness to lay it on the line, what makes you step out and do that?
My background before business school was in consulting. I worked for Bain & Company for 4 years, and it's an incredible company, really great place to work with great people, and it's very hard. You travel 3 or 4 days a week. You work somewhere between 60 and 80 hours a week.
Slacker. I was in the corporate world. Sometimes it was 80 hours a week.
I had my 100-hour weeks. Don't you worry. But, you know, as much great stuff as you get out of that, it's really hard because you're working for someone else on some things that are really cool and interesting and some things that aren't. And while this is not all glorious, there's no question about it, it's still something that we're really excited about. I love being able to walk into the office every Monday morning, talk about what our priorities for the week, for that week, and then to go do it. And it's fun to see the way that the product continues to move in the direction we've talked about. Our sales and marketing continues to move in that direction, and you lay out these goals and we continue to hit them, and that type of environment is what really gets me excited. I mean, frankly, the whole reason I went back to business school was to learn how to start my own company.
So you just confessed you're an adrenaline junkie. But no, I think that's that dynamic. Not everyone will start a business. Not everyone will lay it on the line. I like to say there are settlers. We need the settlers. We like those pioneers that get in the Conestoga wagons and go. We like the trailblazers, the explorers, but those mountain men that went before those explorers, that's what we're looking for. And that's what I think the United States, this area especially, is known for, is those people willing to think out of the box, lay down the regular salary, and think, well, I want to own this. I want that American dream. I want to own my own company. I want to make a difference. I want to be able to take those profits and do with them what I want to do with them.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And, you know, we're fortunate as well that our technical co-founders have been involved in a lot of startups previously. Both myself and Brandon have done some startups when we were, you know, in college. And that type of, you know, going out and doing something new is scary. There's no doubt about it. And there are some serious challenges. But when it works, I mean, it's really a high. It's just something that really gets you excited, you know?
So is it like jumping out of an airplane? Have you ever jumped out of an airplane?
I've not jumped out of an airplane.
So what's the one thing in your life that you would say this was scarier than?
I'm a rugby player.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'm a rugby player, and there's certainly, facing up with some big guys is scary, but this is – it's a different type of risk, and you know, when things don't go well, you know, you get together as a team and you talk it out and you figure out how to move forward. But when things are going well, you know, it's great, and it's really nice to hear good feedback from the owners that have used it for a while, who said, "Man, you've really just made incredible progress, and you're really doing good things here. You know, the owner of Goodfellas has been incredibly helpful with us, and he's just super encouraging about how good of an idea he thinks and he thinks this is. And frankly, the guys at the library too, Dave Wiley over there has been very helpful as well. And I mean, when you talk about building those relationships with people who went out on a limb a little bit with you, right? I mean, you know, sure, they could have just gotten rid of us, but instead they've really stuck with us. It's great.
So if people want to try out CrowdTunes tonight, where would they go? How do they download the app and send them locally?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, if you've got an iPhone right now, you go into the App Store, you look up CrowdTunes, you download it. As soon as you open it, it's going to pretty much be self-explanatory. It's going to give you a credit. It'll show you where to go. Again, Goodfellas in the library locally. We're continuing to expand in
Durham,
Chapel
Raleigh.
Hill. Yeah, in Durham. There's a number of locations in Durham. Satisfaction, Olivia's, The Social, Full Steam, Triangle, Pint and Plate, Divine's. In Raleigh, we've got, London Bridge Pub, Tir na n'Og, The Oxford, and Natty Greens.
Okay.
And then there's going to be some sporting events as well. As I mentioned, I believe the women's volleyball tournament, both Friday and Saturday this week at Cameron Indoor, kind of a cool place to try it out. And we'll continue to push forward. Hopefully we'll get into some places, not only some more venues in Chapel Hill, but hopefully we'll talk to the athletics department here and then ultimately at NC State as well.
So they go out tonight. They love it. They want to let you know. They go to crowdtunes.com and just reach out and contact you and let you know.
And you could also do it directly through the app, so it should be
pretty straightforward. Okay, great. And you have a Twitter handle?
We do, at CrowdTunes.
All right. I want to thank you, Lee, for being on the show, and I want to wish you good luck on the real deal and getting that $500,000 raise. And until next time, everyone, let's stay focused on the important things in life, and we'll talk to you next week.